This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for business and IT professionals. This episode is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. This is episode 60 with Jeff Alexander. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, I'm joined by Jeff Alexander, a senior technology evangelist with Microsoft. How are you, Jeff?
I'm good, Robert. How are you today?
Not too bad. I see that you've come up in the world. You've become a senior technology evangelist now.
Yeah. The senior is just, they have to do something after you've been here for so long, right?
Yeah. What you need to do then is just give us a bit of an intro to everybody who may not be familiar with yourself,
yeah.
And let us know what you do and a bit of your background.
Yeah, I'm a senior technical evangelist at Microsoft here in Sydney. My main focus is Windows infrastructure. So I focus on the Windows Server products, Windows Server 2012 R2, cloud, private cloud, hybrid cloud, all that kind of stuff. Also focused on Windows and Windows devices. Windows Phone 8.1, anything to do with Windows in the infrastructure side of things, and talking to the IT pro audience is really what I focus on.
Well, I think you've come to the right place. So I think listeners today will get a huge amount of value out of this. So
okay.
why don't we kick it off? I think probably the thing that seems to have the most buzz or the most excitement around it at the moment is the Windows Phone 8.1 release and upgrade, or whatever you want to call. I mean, what are you seeing from your end of the seat there as how that's progressing for Microsoft?
Well, I've been running it since the developer preview came out in probably 2 or 3 months ago, and there's been a lot of positive feedback about it. The first thing that you'll hear a lot of people say is that we're catching up in a lot of ways with, if you look at a lot of the features that they have on iOS, Android, we are catching up with things like the notification center, which you can pull down from the top of the screen, and you can get all the standard notification things like the emails you've got, your calendar, your reminders, any text that you got, that kind of stuff, without having to unlock the device itself. We released an update about a month after it came out, and that was looking at fixing a fair few things. The other thing is Cortana is getting a lot of attention, which is our Siri-like kind of thing that they've put into Windows Phone 8.1 that's going to be available initially in the US first, and then in the UK, and then followed with other markets. So I've been running it on a Nokia Lumia 1020. To be honest with you, I'm actually running it on 4 different phones right now because I've completely upgraded the family at home. I'm running Phone 8.1 on all those devices. And if I look at the interest in Windows Phone 8.1 is that we now have a lot of interest from enterprises who are deploying devices, which you've probably seen a lot of companies looking at Windows 8.1. We're also looking at a lot of companies looking at the features that are in it from an enterprise point of view. There's a lot of cool things for the user that you use. And if I look at it, my daily use of the device, today, I think I told you before we kicked off, I was riding my bike this morning, and I got a text from somebody, and I was able to use Cortana to reply to the text and call them back without taking my hands off the bike at all. This Cortana, I've switched over. I'm using Cortana here in Australia, and there's a way to get around actually being able to use it here. And it is pretty awesome. And it's a little bit different in what we had with Siri. What's in Siri is that this is a digital assistant, and they went and talked to PAs in the US, personal assistants, executive PAs and all these kind of people that look after senior executives. And they talked to them about how do you actually, look after an executive? How do you look after a person? And they molded Siri around that. Cortana around that. And I don't know if you're running 8.1 on your phone or not, but it's the voice from Halo. Mm-hmm. So it's the female voice from Halo, which is ironic because she dies in Halo 4.
You've spoiled it for me now, Jeff. You shouldn't have done that. Cortana, so Cortana 2, Revenge of Cortana, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And look, I use that every day. And of course, the other really cool things that they've added from a user perspective is three rows of tiles on smaller screen devices. Originally, that was only supported on the bigger screen devices, the 5 and 6 inch devices. And now, you know, with the 1020 and all those smaller 4.3 screens, is that you can have three tiles, plus you have a background image that you can actually put behind your tiles to make your tiles kind of transparent. The other thing I love that they've added in this is they finally got built-in podcast support within the app as well, which is really, really nice. And that just makes it, you don't have to go and download an additional application for that. So there's some really, really cool things in that. But what we're actually seeing from a code base is, Robert, what we're seeing is that we're getting closer to these two operating, the phone operating system and the Windows operating system converging into to a standard code base. One of the big things they announced at Build is they're supporting developers to be able to have their code in both marketplaces now, because the marketplaces are much more lined up now. So what you'll see in Windows 8.1, when you go to the store, you'll see a little icon on that app telling you whether it's also available on Windows Phone 8.1. So that when enterprises are deploying devices, people need a phone, people need a device, they can see which apps are going to be supported on both platforms, which is giving them a much more cohesive experience. And so that's a really, really big thing. And as you know, the Nokia transition has completed now. So Nokia is in house, and there's a lot of good things going on with that. But you know, if you look at it from an enterprise point of view, the Office apps are going to be better than what you actually see on Phone 8 today. They're going to be more similar to what you see on iPad. We're going to have enterprise VPN and Wi-Fi built in, S/MIME support for secure encrypted email, enhanced device and app management through OMA DM, Open Mobile Device Management. Certificate management, enterprise wipe, enhanced asset management, and assigned access. So there's a number of things that they've done from the enterprise point of view, because that's where we're really trying to see that this is focused is on, is that you probably see this in small business a lot, is people have all kinds of different phones, and how do you actually manage the data that's going out of those devices? So they're going to have Office built in with the ability to read and write IRM rights management mail with S/MIME. We can go in and stop people from forwarding emails from their device. You know, some of those enterprise features that people are really looking for are going to be built into the Windows Phone 8.1 platform. And we're really talking about more convergence around the devices themselves, shared API set across all those different devices. And that's making it much better for developers who can push out their applications to both platforms.
So I suppose the big question for us here in sunny old Australia is when is the normal consumer going to see the 8.1 pushed out to the phone? What's the sort of time period on that?
I think it's going to be later this year, I believe, is when if you look at we're limited by the telcos within country. So I haven't heard exactly when it's going to be available. But what we're seeing is that second quarter of the 2014 calendar year. Mm-hmm. So right now, and it's kind of deceiving the way that you actually get it. They call it a developer preview, but really anybody can go up and actually get it. You can set up a developer account for free, and you can download the developer bits. All you have to do is put a small app on your phone, tick a box that says I want to enroll in this, and we'll push it. It'll push it down over the Windows Update servers. The deployment of the upgrade will depend upon the model of phone that you actually have. We'll do it over the air through the Microsoft Cloud. It'll go to existing Windows Phone 8 handsets, but it'll be dependent upon the handset that you actually have and your mobile operator. We're delivering the handsets to the probably summertime US time and later this year, because they're almost finished with that at the moment. So that's kind of where we're actually at this point in time. I think Nokia has a schedule up on their website, which if you want, I can send that to you and give you that. You can put that in the show notes if you want to.
Okay. So, I mean, before technically, obviously, when people have put on a developer preview or a beta or whatever, they've been, you know, there's been a trip up generally. They may have had to, you know, reformat or do something major to get it back to a normal RTM when it comes out. Is that going to be the case with this, you know, if you go the developer route early?
No, it's not. It's going to be seamless. It's going to be a complete seamless upgrade. We will just push the RTM code, and then your operator will push a firmware update out after that. That will light up some additional features for the not only for the handset, but also for the depending upon which operator you're on as well.
Okay, so obviously, you know, Windows Phone in general is coming from behind. It's coming for a low market share, and obviously there's some, you know, the other incumbent players are fairly well entrenched. I mean, how does sort of, can you comment on Microsoft's strategy going forward as to how it sees this playing out? Because obviously it's difficult to be, you know, a bit of a third player, I suppose. You're talking about the enterprise side of it, but are you also aiming at the consumer side as well? I mean, what's the sort of a bit longer term for the Windows Phone, do you think?
Well, interestingly enough, we've got a very good partner in Nokia in emerging markets. Right now, if you look at our growth of Windows Phone is 91% year-over-year growth, and these are numbers that we just got from the US. Windows Phone is number two in 9 markets. Right now, if you look at Vietnam, we had one of our evangelists actually went over to Vietnam, and Windows phones are everywhere. I saw them in Bali when I was in Bali as well. One of the things that we found in emerging markets is that premium devices from iOS and from Android are out of reach for a lot of people in developing countries. Okay, so if you look at this is why when we partnered with Nokia, they make phones right up all the way up to the higher end of the market that you're going to want to see. As a premium device that you might get in a country like Australia, or you want to deploy in an enterprise, right down to the Lumia 520, which is a low-end smartphone that's going to be very, very price conscious for those different countries. So we're starting to see a lot more momentum in regards to a lot of different markets. Vietnam, Asian countries, China, we're seeing a lot of growth there. And if you look at other parts of the world, you know, I think we're probably third in a lot of cases behind Android and iOS in those devices. And, you know, that I think what we've got to do is we've also got to get to a point where we're feature parity on a lot of the things. So if there's a whole bunch of boxes that we've ticked to make it more compelling for people to actually look at these devices now. Obviously, the apps have to be there. Because that's the biggest thing. You hear this all the time, is people say there's not an app, you know, you don't have all the apps, but that's growing considerably. We have 49, I think, of the 50 top apps on iOS on Windows Phone, and we're making more and more partnerships every day. So it's the apps that we have on the platform and the developers writing apps for the platform is going to really be the big part of this. And so that, and also the other thing is around API convergence, about making it easy for developers to write for both platforms, whether it's Windows or whether it's actually Windows Phone. So converging these APIs together is really a big thing, and that's what we're really focusing on.
So obviously you're talking about convergence there, and we've moved to a Windows 8.1 update for obviously the PC-based systems. I mean, you're talking about tighter and tighter integration. I mean, are these things sort of moving together? I mean, again, is it I can see that they are converging. They're looking very similar. Is that the sort of the plan for Microsoft? Obviously, is this unification?
Yeah. Eventually what you'll see, and one of the things we're trying to do, a lot of people that are still stuck on older operating systems are stuck there because of the heavy upgrade costs that we have to move to later operating systems. So as we move to Windows, if people get onto at least Windows 8 or Windows 7, then the heavy lifting of doing an upgrade is far less than it was going from, say, an XP to a Windows 7. And what you're seeing is that we want to actually make it so that eventually it becomes a subscription model, right? If you look at Office right now, I know that you do a fair bit of work around Office 365, which is a fantastic model in the sense that it's a subscription base, right? You just subscribe to Office, new updates come out, you just get those pushed down to you. Eventually what we see is that Windows will be more like that subscription model in that you don't have to worry so much about updates. We just deliver them over the cloud. You saw that Windows when Windows 8.1 update came out, it was done through the marketplace. Same with Windows 8.1 update that came out. That was done through an update through the store. So making this whole, and then making the core code base underneath Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1 more sharing more APIs. And I don't know whether it's going to be Windows 9 or whether it's going to be beyond that, but the goal is to converge and have the core APIs across both platforms.
Okay, so are you seeing, you know, a move by more developers to get onto the Windows 8.1 platform, given now that there's a phone base, there's a tablet base, there's a PC mm-hmm. base, and I suppose to a server, the server code is very similar.
Yeah, and look, that's we're obviously, you know, my team, which is has changed their name to DX. Which is kind of a strange name. It used to be developer platform evangelism. Now it's developer experience or something like that. And so, you know, abbreviated to DX. And so they're working a lot, very, very closely with a lot of the developers locally that are seeing the advantages now of Windows 8.1. Because the big thing with us now is that we're able to respond. I mean, you know all about the feedback that we got in regards to Windows 8 when it came out, the no start button, all this kind of stuff. But we're not in a cycle now where we're releasing operating systems every 4 or every 2 years, right? We're going to release another update to Windows 8 towards the end of this year, before Windows 9. And you saw the preview that they showed of Windows 9 at Build. So we're able to actually be able to have a much more modular system and be able to produce updates far more quickly. So the Windows 8.1 was the update and as a result of a year's worth of development work. Update, the first update that came out was 3 months worth of update. And if you look at the Windows team is all under Terry Morrison in the US. The phone team is in the same team. All the operating system teams are all in one team now. They're not separate teams. So they're working together more closely on a common goal going forward. Rather than being different teams doing different things, they're actually all together under one roof now. So that's a big difference, is getting people working more closely together.
So I suppose the other thing that is of interest is obviously being, you know, inside Microsoft, and you've seen the change of CEO, and it seems yep. to me that Microsoft has become revitalized. There's a lot of press out there talking about how it's a changed organization, and many people attribute that to a new CEO, which I don't believe is the case. Obviously, a lot of this was put in motion beforehand, but yep. you know, from your perspective, from you know what it was a few years, you know, a while ago, to what's sort of happened recently, to me it seems that, you know, Microsoft's now, you know, put its foot on the accelerator. It's got its mojo back, and it's sort of becoming, you know, get that energy that it used to have, you know, a long time ago. It was releasing lots of new products, bringing out lots of software, consumer and enterprise based. Is that sort of the feeling internally?
Oh yeah, yeah. Look, I think Satya Nadella has brought a renewed energy to the company. And what I've seen, and I've seen a lot of local CEOs, I've seen a lot of, you know, change throughout the company in my 27 years here. And what I'm seeing is that it feels more like the Microsoft years ago, where we were just coming out with stuff that people really wanted, right? The best example I can see is when we released Office on iPad, and we had like 12 million downloads in the first week. You know, that was amazing in the sense that there was a decision that needed to be made, and we made it, and we moved forward, right? That's what I'm noticing, is that we're not kind of sitting back, do we release this, do we not, or blah, blah, blah. We're looking at the market, we're looking at the what people need, we're going, right, iPad is a very popular platform, we need to have Office on that platform, job done, let's get it done. And, you know, I think that what's happening is the company is on the move. Like you said, the company is on the move now. And we've got a lot of good things to show people. We're bringing forward the good work that we're doing in research. I don't know if you saw that short little video that they showed, the Skype translator.
Yeah, the Skype translation on the fly. That was very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, that is – and the thing about it is that we've been doing this kind of work for so many years, but it wasn't being bubbled up to the surface. Bring the guys out, the research guys, the technical geeks that are that are developing this stuff and bring them up to the fore and have them show what they're doing. Because I think that's what is it gives you inspiration, is you see these guys that are writing this stuff and developing all this stuff. And if we do more of that, I think, you know, Satya kind of stood back on that and he said, I'm not the guy that did this. I'm just going to intro it, but here's the researcher guy that's actually involved with this, and let the people do it. And I think that's what you're seeing is, like, you know, when Bill Gates was running the company, you had a technical geek at the head. We now have a technical guy running the place. It's not to say that it was, you know, bad or worse or good or whatever before. It's just a different time. But I think what we see now is that we've got that technical life back, if you get my, not that it was ever gone, it was just kind of bubbling behind the surface, I guess. But what we're seeing now is that it's exciting, and we've got a lot of stuff that we're doing and a lot of stuff to show, you know.
So I think a lot of it too is, you know, Microsoft obviously had to retool, had to change direction, as it has done before. But then what's happening now is all that hard work that's been put in place early on is now beginning to, you know,
That's right.
Reap reward. So, I mean, to me, a really good example, which is probably still under the radar, which is now beginning to take the spotlight, is Azure. So, I mean, the stuff that's happening around that, and I've recently, you know, spent some more time learning it and understanding it and getting it to work for myself, I think it's fantastic. And then when you understand that and then you look at what can be expanded, what the breadth of that solution can do, it's ginormous. And many people come to me and say, you know, oh, it's not going to be an SMB solution, or it's not going to be, it's just, I see it applying across so much stuff. And it, having someone like Mark Rusinovich too, you know, that sort of guy running that or being involved in that sort of product is I reckon this is really one of the key things that Microsoft's bringing. And one of the big things for here in Australia is that obviously there'll be a local data center opening up. So, I mean, what's your feel? What's your comment on the whole Azure thing?
Well, Azure is another area where we're just moving at breakneck speed at this point in time. The number of announcements that we made at TechEd North America around Azure, RDS running, and I've tested the RDS, remote apps on Azure. Unbelievable. Like, I can run, I can push down remote applications, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and run them in an Azure data center. It's fantastic stuff that they're actually doing there. They announced enhancements to the Hyper-V Recovery Manager that they're going to be doing on Azure. So essentially being able to, if you're a small business, you can recover you can basically do disaster recovery up to Microsoft Azure. Now, in Australia, of course, a lot of customers are concerned about data sovereignty, right? So, you know, our country manager, who you know, Robert, Pip, has been pushing the U.S. to get data centers here in this region. And so later this year, we will have geo-redundant data centers in Sydney and Melbourne, meaning that people will be able to put their services in a data center here in Australia. So, you know, our goal fairly soon, we just opened up data centers in China, and we also opened up data centers in Japan. We're also going to be opening up data centers in Brazil soon. So looking at that Pacific Rim down below, because, you know, so our goal is with Azure is just, you've got Scott Guthrie kind of driving a lot of what's going on from an Azure perspective, Mark Rusinovich in that group as well. And we're just... I talk to customers, I talk to enterprise customers about Windows Server, and a lot of them are still running all their stuff on premise. And I get a lot of kind of interesting comments that people make, oh, you know, the cloud's not going to be really happening for another 2 years. And I kind of stand there with my jaw open going, are you kidding me? This is happening right now. This is happening around you right now. Go and talk to a startup. Go and talk to a company that is just trying to get funding. The cloud is, they rely on the cloud like you would not believe. They don't have infrastructure on premise. They put everything in the cloud. The other thing I talk about to IT pros is that, you know, if you have developers on premise and your IT is seen as a bottleneck, they will go to the cloud to deploy their application. You know, and what we're talking to customers about is a hybrid model. You don't have to take your server out of your organization and put it up in the cloud. You can put parts of it up in the cloud. And I'm sure you're talking to small business about this as well. There's a number of things that small business can actually do. I mean, Office 365 is the first one right out of the gate, is to be able to do their their Office applications and their email in the cloud. And they can be in a hybrid world. They don't have to actually move everything off-premise. We have the ability to connect to your on-premise through some of the synchronization tools that we have with Azure Active Directory, because the identity piece is a lot of what people actually miss. They have Active Directory on-premise, and they can connect up to Active Directory in the cloud and have the ability to do VPN, all this kind of stuff by using Azure. There's a whole bunch of things, and you don't have to be a big enterprise. The example I saw, I don't know if you saw this post on the in the cloud blog that Brad Anderson actually did a while back, not too long ago actually. It was a customer who had a web application, and the web side of it was getting hammered, and it was causing a lot of lost revenue. They paid $130 to move a portion of their website up to Azure, and they got rid of all the bottlenecks that they were having. It's not that they moved their entire infrastructure up. They just moved a portion of that to handle the load that particular front-end web part had to actually have. So there's huge opportunity and upside. There's also a huge opportunity for systems administrators to become cloud administrators. And there's a lot for them. The opportunities are many and great for people that are doing on-premise work, because how many guys do you know that deal with Active Directory every day?
Oh, there's huge amounts. But I suppose the question I've got is what are you seeing of these professionals actually take that up and onboard that and upgrade their upgrade their skill set? I think that there still seems to be a lot of hesitation to
there's resistance.
To this sort. Yeah, there's resistance.
There is definitely resistance. And one of the things that we want to do in FY15, and one of the things we've been talking about for the last 6 months, is and this is something you'll see a session at Tech in North America that Rick Claus and Joey Snow do about a two-part session of how to move to upskill yourself to cloud and to move to cloud. And so that's how much we're thinking about it, in the sense that there was a couple of sessions at Tech Ed that were talking about it. And what we're trying to do is, how can we help IT pros, first of all, not be afraid of the cloud and think it's going to take away their job, but how can they embrace it and then enhance their skill set moving forward? And so we're going to do a lot more of that work in FY15 to help IT pros to move to this new model of how we're doing things. And I think there is, and I've been out, we've done 40 IT camps in the last 6 months or whatever it is. And a lot of, we've done hybrid ones, we've done ones on Windows Server. People still are in the old way of work, right? They're not doing a lot of automation. There's resistance to Windows PowerShell, which is a lot of what drives the cloud today on our platform, is the automation piece, the orchestration piece. So we've got to help the community get better skilled in scripting with Windows PowerShell, and also being able to be better at System Center. So what we're seeing is that people are resistant, because you know what it's like, people don't like change. But what we have to be able to tell them is there a future for them by moving to this new cloud model? And I think there is. I think there's a lot of upside for systems administrators to do that, because when I look down through all the list of people that come to our IT camps, most of them are systems engineers. Most of them are systems administrators or sysadmins. They've got a really strong base of skills that's going to very, very naturally move to the cloud. They just gotta have a little faith, I guess. I think there's a lot of resistance because people are fearful of the unknown, and they don't think it's going to make their lives any better.
I think part of it too is it's a case of you can't do it all anymore. I mean, there is just so much stuff going on that, if you wanted to get into Azure, I mean, there's virtual machines, there's mobile development, there's, Linux, there's many options. And to, go in there for the first time, it's like, oh my God, where do I start? And I think, with Office 365, same sort of deal. You've got Link, you've got SharePoint, you've got Exchange, you've got Office, you've got, there's just such huge amounts of opportunity that the traditional IT person who used to do everything, they used to run up the servers, put on patches, change disks, do connect printers, all that sort of stuff. I just don't think that's possible anymore. I think the insecurity is to think, well, hang on, if I specialize in this one area or just AD identity or something like that, I'm not going to be able to grow my career. I think that's the biggest fear that people need to overcome. They're so used to doing everything because that's what they needed to do to make coin. But now it's a case of, you know what, it's the complete opposite. You know, we need specialists who can do that one thing and then obviously network with others. So I think that's the problem to an extent as well. There's just so much opportunity. It's helping people make the right choice. And
correct.
One of the great opportunities is let's say that you're, you know, an IT pro or whatever, but you've got a bit of a bent as a developer. I mean, here's a great opportunity to pivot into a mobile app, into, you know, Azure development or something like that. Here's that opportunity to really do perhaps what you're wanting to do. So I think some of it too is a case of, you know, there's just so much that, again, people are a bit stunned as to what actually to
they
do.
Are. They are, and their level of knowledge goes back a number of years. You know, if you look at the operating systems that they understand, they're just getting up to speed on 2008, and here we are at the R2 release with an update of 2012. So, you know, just them learning one piece of that, like we talk about network virtualization or we talk about storage, there's a whole bunch of turnkey things that are changing the way that we do things in the data center. One of those is storage. And then getting their head around all this stuff, like you said, is where do I start? And I always say to them, look, you know, you got to pick a couple of things. Don't try to do everything. Pick two or three things that you can really learn and just focus on that for the time being. But because if they do try to learn about Azure and then they try to learn about storage on Windows Server or they try to learn about this, they're just, like you said, they're going to get overwhelmed and they're going to go, I'll just stay with what I got.
Well, also, I think a lot of it, too, is unfortunately that the traditional IT person has very much been a lone gun. They've been able to accomplish everything themselves and, you know, research. I just don't think that's possible anymore. I think they really need to get a group of other techies around them. So, you know, one does Azure, one does Office 365, one does development, one does CRM, and sort of build that network so that they can solve all the problems but be confident that they don't have to do it themselves. I just think that that's what a lot of people are trying to do is they're working in the old world and, well, I did it all before, I have to do it all again, there's too much information, therefore I'm not able to move forward. But I think a lot of it, the secret to it is giving it, you know, basically giving it away and just saying, look, I'm interested, I know it at a high level, but if I have an issue I need to go and talk to this person or this is how I find the solution.
And it's harder, and that's often harder in Australia. I know what that's like. If you look at my job, myself and Andrew, we do a number of different products, right? Mainly because there's just not enough of us in Australia to be able to do that. If you go over to America, they'll have somebody that, because they got so many guys there, one person will focus on storage. All they do is storage. So in Australia, we are kind of jacks of all trades because we don't have the people to hire. So I don't know how possible that's going to be, you know, that's the other problem is that if you've ever looked at a project plan for deploying a particular product, like say Windows Server or whatever, and in the documents they'll talk about this team and that team, and you're all kind of in Australia, you're kind of going, well, that's me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so sometimes we don't have the luxury of having all that stuff. So that's the other thing that concerns me is that how are they going to get their head around all this stuff if they are the only person? So I think what cloud is going to help us do is to be more efficient in the way that we do stuff, so that it can help them free up their time. If they're able to automate some stuff that they're doing, then maybe they're not spending so much time on manual tasks that frees them up to learn a few more things. Maybe.
And I totally agree. I think automation is the key. It's actually using the PowerShell, using the, you know, automated machines or whatever to run up in, you know, Azure, all that sort of stuff. It takes away the mundane stuff, which once you've done once, you're pretty familiar with. So I think, you know, that's one of the first things that probably should be let go. All this, you know, low-level stuff, that's great, and they've already got the basis. There's no need to go back and revisiting it. Once you've got that skill set, you can then say, right, I want to move to the higher order, and I think that's what people need to do. So, I think there's so much opportunity in so many different areas, and it's interesting to me that a lot of people are still hesitant, they're still unsure, but I think I'm beginning to appreciate that perhaps it's a case of, you know, too many choices. Where do they to basically put down their cards so that they, you know, they feel that they're secure in what they do? So that's probably their biggest challenge.
Well, I think they need to cover what's going to cover the given the broadest brush, and I think you hit on the right one, which is PowerShell. If they learn PowerShell, they can automate a lot of that mundane task, then freeing them up to learn more, right? So if they're learning more because they're not doing all the mundane day-to-day stuff. I mean, I had a guy at an IT camp once say to me, oh, it takes too long for me to set up the PowerShell script. I'd rather do it manually. You know, and so you're not going to get anywhere with that because you're not willing to take the first step. I think there has to be a little bit of the willingness to take that first step.
There's an investment that needs to be made into.
There is an investment. Yeah. There's also a responsibility as a large provider that Microsoft and others have to help get you guys there. So that's what we're trying to think about. How can we help you to get there? Because you know, half of the problem is that we're the ones that are creating so much change, right? Yeah. Microsoft is the one releasing operating systems every so often that it's just making the administrator's life, because they can't kind of put their tent down and say, this is the version we're on, right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, basically like it's a fire hose full-time 24/7, where it used to be once every 3 years you get a fire hose for, you know, a month, and then you'd settle down and work everything out and come back in another 3 years and you'd be able to handle it. You're getting twice the amount of information in, you know, basically every day, and that's very hard to
And it's not and the thing is, it's not that type of world anymore, right? And it's being driven by what users expect. If you think about what users expect today, think about the amount of processing you do on your mobile phone every day, right? So we as an enterprise have to be able to respond to what people are demanding, right? So people are demanding more than what they got 10 years ago, right? So as an IT organization, as technical professionals, we have to be able to provide that information. So that's what I see. I see a lot of guys that are getting more and more demand from their users about what they actually need and to get their job done. And so, you know, things like BYOD, people ready IT, all this kind of stuff are driving a lot of this stuff. And why we're actually doing so much change is because the marketplace is demanding that change. And we're not, it's not just our area. It's like, think about when you go out and buy a TV or something like that. You know, as you're putting it in a car and taking it home, it's probably out of date.
Well, even a car too. A car's, you know, the technology that's now going into cars and all these, you know, blind spot sensors and you know, all this sort of stuff is just amazing. And I think again,
I was in the US recently, and my brother has this Nissan or whatever it is, and it had this rear vision camera. He didn't even have to look when he parked; he could watch it on the screen, and he was able to get really close to the curb, backing up because we were doing some gardening in his house, and it had this camera that was unbelievable. I couldn't believe the technology, you know. And my car is like 10 years old and it's like a dinosaur, you know. So, but I don't drive it enough to justify getting another one. So, you know, there you go. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think. Go on. Yep.
Go on. Yeah, now you go.
I was just going to say that one of the other things that I suppose has been a change with Microsoft of late, apart from all the software, is now obviously the devices. So it's now going into, you know, the Surface Pro, and I have, you know, version one of that. I think it's fantastic. Use it as my main machine. Really fantastic. Looking forward to the Surface Pro 3. Obviously, I think that's received pretty universal acclamation for what it is and what it does. I mean, you know, it seems, again, a bit of a transition for Microsoft to move from, you know, someone that's total software to now you've got Nokia on board, you've now got Surfaces, and, you know, many people sort of question that, but my experience has been is that Microsoft providing that gives the end user the full Microsoft experience. You know, it doesn't come loaded with all this other software to try and make money for the OEM or the intermediate. I think, a pure Microsoft experience really makes a phenomenal difference. It really does.
It also drives innovation within the OEM channel as well. The biggest thing we had when we released the original Surface is that, you know, how do your partners feel about this? And I think in a way it really gave them an opportunity to step back and go, well, what can we do to innovate? So I think, you know, Microsoft doing the Surface device, I use a Surface Pro, I use I was using a Surface Pro 2 for a while there. And look, the Surface Pro on its for value for money, I think, what was JB Hi-Fi selling these for? I saw recently like $500 or $600.
Yeah, something like that.
For a Pro 1, I mean, it's a Core i5 processor. It's a fun, that's a phenomenal deal. But what I think you're right is that when you open it out of the box, there's no crapware. It just works out of the box. It's fast. It's a seamless experience. You have one place to go for support if you have a problem.
Well, I think the other device. Thing too is it comes embedded with the touch, and once you get it and Windows 8, it makes so much more sense because it's embedded into the device.
Yeah, and when we first released Windows 8, we probably over I don't know if it's over or underestimated. I'm not sure which one it is, but we certainly thought that there would be more touch devices in market at that time, and there wasn't at the time, because when you look at a device, Windows 8 makes more sense when you can reach out and touch the screen, until you actually do it. And a lot of people I say that don't have touch devices go, why would I want to reach out and touch the screen? But once they do it, and they do it for a few days or a few weeks, it becomes a natural way to interface with the device, right? And of course, you know, the Surface Pro 3 has been in development for 3 years, right? So, you know, we always had a forward vision with the Surface devices, right? And so the Pro 3 is, I was gobsmacked when I saw that. And of course, everybody internally is like, wants to have one. And we see it as a way for us to actually really get to a point of replay. You said you used the Surface Pro as your primary machine.
Yep.
Right now I don't. I have a Lenovo X1 Carbon, mainly because, you know, they give you that and blah, blah, blah. And it's the bigger screen and it's the laptop keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
I've yet to try the keyboard on the Surface Pro 3 with the magnet and angling it up. But from what I've heard, that actually makes it much more like... I was talking to somebody the other day who actually held a Surface Pro 3. I was so jealous. And they said that by having that angle up, the keyboard is not touching the desk.
Yep.
So it's a more stable platform.
Yep.
So that's an innovative thing that they've actually done. And what they were amazed by is how light it was for a 12.1-inch screen.
Mm.
That was the thing. They couldn't believe how light it was and how easy it felt in the hand. And I don't know if you watch Windows Weekly podcast.
Yep.
They were talking to Mary Jo Foley and she was saying, and Paul Thrott, who is, I think he had a prior career as a comedian, because he's a very, very funny guy. Very, very dry sense of humor.
Yeah, I like him. Dry sense of humor.
I like him. I very love that dry sense of humor. But she was saying her number one thing that she made was the pen.
Yeah.
She said the pen is gold. And, you know, being able to just hit the button and be able to actually load OneNote, she said it's fantastic. She doesn't see it as her replacement because of the way she works. And I think she has a very good view about how...
She's a full-time keyboard user. She needs
a keyboard. Yeah. She's typing like, you know, they're churning out articles. If you look at Windows Phone Central and those guys, they're churning out articles left, right, and center. So, you know, I understand where they're coming from. For me, I could probably use the Surface Pro 3 as my primary device, you know, because it's got a screen that's big enough, because I like the real estate, because I do a lot of admin work on servers and blah, blah, blah. So it would be good for that perspective. And having one device and not having to go through airport security and take this out and take that out and blah, 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 because I have an 8-inch tablet, which I like for reading, which is a Lenovo Mix 2. I wish I'd have got the waited for the Lenovo ThinkPad 8, but it hadn't come out yet. So I use the 8-inch tablet because I read books and magazines and stuff on that, and I find that a great form factor. So I think my ultimate would be to have the Surface Pro 3 and a 8-inch tablet and obviously a phone, and that would be it. And it would be fairly light, and you would have a fairly large amount of power in that device. And I love that they go up to i7, you know, so, you know, the work that they did, I don't know if you watched the launch of the Surface, but the stuff they did with the fan to get it that thin is amazing. So I think, you know, Microsoft has always, it's funny, a lot of people don't realize this, but Microsoft has made mice since the early, probably the late 80s. We made mice when they first came out. We were the first one to come out with mice. So Microsoft has a very long history in hardware that I think people probably don't realize, particularly in keyboards, mice, and webcams.
Well, a good example of that is I remember back in the day, long, long time ago, you know, one of the original laptops, you could, you know, swap it over and you could, you know, make it so you could write on the screen. And you know, back in the day, OneNote, you could do handwriting. You had to put extensions, but you could eventually get it to do, you know, handwriting recognition directly into OneNote. Yeah. And that was like, you know, 10 odd years ago. Now today,
Windows XP tablet PC edition.
Exactly. Now that technology was pioneered by Microsoft way before anybody else, and you know they saw the future. And look today, you got a Surface 3, push a button, OneNote comes up, and you start writing on it. And again, you look at some of the videos on the YouTube channel for Surface, and it's like, oh, this thing makes so much sense. You know, doctor surgeries, all this sort of stuff, and it's like, you know what, it's not, you know, completely new. Microsoft has been pioneering this since a long, long time. And now, only now, is it all the stuff, you know, beginning to come together, the hardware, the software, the cloud connectivity and all that sort of stuff is allowing this thing to be possible. So, yeah, I think a lot of people overlook that when it comes to the technologies that Microsoft has pioneered.
Yeah, and I think now what you're seeing now, and you asked earlier about our new CEO, is now what you're actually seeing, we have this term internally called One Microsoft. And what it means is that thinking about the work that you're actually doing, are you doing it for a common One Microsoft goal? So what you're seeing now is the changes is that people are more cross-collaborating and working together. And I know that sounds like a marketing bullshit kind of thing, right? But it isn't. It's people are thinking, how can we work better together? How can we do that? And look, we're still spending more than any other company on research and development. And what's ending up happening is that all this innovation is coming into our products. And, you know, Surface is a great example of a cross-company collaboration, a hardware product and a software product coming together to give the user the best experience that we can possibly give them. And I think when you buy a Surface, you do get a fantastic experience. You get a really good out of the box. It's dead easy. It's up fairly quickly. You know, we're starting to get more peripherals with it. I would love to see the dock here in Australia, but I haven't heard anything on that because I think that would be and there's a lot of people. You probably work at a desk some of the time and you're probably out on the road part of the time as well. It'd be great to be able to just click into that dock. And away you go. And, you know, I think we're continuing to drive innovation. I mean, we, you know, it goes back to the keyboards, mouse. Even people that are naysayers of Microsoft have always said, geez, Microsoft makes really good keyboards and makes really good mice. So we have a lot of hardware pedigree. We just got to, you know, meld that into the software. And it's really good. I mean, you know, and the Xbox stuff was something that came from the ground up as nothing. We didn't even have a presence in that market, and we managed to bring a console to market, and things are good. My son was over at a friend's place on the weekend who just got an Xbox One. So that wasn't a very interesting ride on the way home because he was asking me left, right, and center, when are we getting an Xbox One? And I said, son, we got two Xbox 360s. Let's just step back and relax a second here. You know?
Daddy wants a new car first.
Yeah, well, you know, we're renovating a house, so we've got to think about maybe when the house is renovated and we'll have more rooms, then we can get an Xbox One and put it somewhere else. But for now, I'm thinking about it from a first world problem point of view. We're okay for the time being. So, but look, I'm excited about the Surface Pro 3, as a lot of people are. I wish I was around. I was in the office the day that it was going around. I would have enjoyed actually having a look at it. And I heard the Flex kickstand. I wasn't expecting that, you know, because they went from one position to two to all of a sudden 0 to 150 degrees. I mean, geez, that means you can just put it any way you want, which is fantastic. And, you know, I've had some feedback from people going, oh, it's too expensive. And we're not pretending to say that this is a entry-level device. This is a premium device, but it's one premium device that you can replace. If you saw what Panos Panay said, is that 96% of people that have iPads have another device.
Yep.
So how much are you paying for an iPad?
Yep.
How much is an iPad? How much is an iPad in Australia now?
Probably around $800 to $1,000.
$800 or whatever. And then how much is a decent laptop? You know, I people think they're going to get a decent laptop for $500, and you're not.
No.
If you want to get a Core i7 processor, you're paying $1,500 to $2,000 still these days to get a decent screen. You can get a crappy screen, but you're not going to have the best experience. So, you know, in the Surface screen, even on the Pro, is amazing that they got 1080p on that screen. Exactly. So do you use the type cover or the touch cover?
I use the type cover because I like keyboard, you know, keyboard raised keyboards, basically.
Same. I used the touch cover for a while, but then I was like, nah, forget that. And I use because I'm like you, I have to have the keys. And I bought the new one, which is the one with the backlit. That actually has better throw on the keys. So that it's actually better to type. And I tell you what, if you've ever been on a plane in dimly lit light and you just move your hands to the keyboard and it lights up, it's just those little things of hardware and software working together, you know, and like that stuff they do with OneNote by being able to just click the pen opens up OneNote. There's hardware and software working together and then click it again and it saves it to the cloud. So this is a number of teams working together, not only our cloud platform, our operating system, being able to communicate with the pen and the hardware people designing the pen and the Surface device that it's running on. You know, so there's a lot of stuff coming together now, which is fantastic. And I think things are looking pretty interesting going forward. I think it's going to be fun times. I think I say to people, just enjoy the ride, you know. Jump on and enjoy it.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we better look at ending up. We could spend all day, obviously, talking on these technologies and whatnot. So, obviously, thanks, Jeff, for all his time. And I suppose, you know, all the discussions we've had, particularly from an IT professional point of view, Jeff, I mean, what's firstly, the major takeaway you give people? Obviously, PowerShell's one of them. But what are the major takeaways they need to start looking at? And then if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, yeah, obviously they, from an IT pro perspective, they need to start to look at PowerShell. The one thing we didn't mention was desired state configuration. So they can find out more about PowerShell by going to powershell.org, which is a community for people that are doing PowerShell. And it's a very, very welcoming community that helps beginners, it helps experts, whatever. So it's a great place for them to start. There's also information up there about desired state configuration. That's a direction that PowerShell is actually moving towards. And simply in a nutshell, what that is saying that we want to make sure that we keep our servers in an SOE type deployment and to avoid configuration drift of our servers and desired state. And what we're doing with PowerShell is helping that. So they can find out more about that on PowerShell.org. The other thing is to go up and have a look and get a 30-day trial of Azure.
Well, just before you do, the other thing I would say is most people who have ActionPack or some MSDN subscription get $100 worth of credits anyway.
Correct.
So there's no reason not to start playing with it. There's effectively no cost and you're losing money by not taking advantage of those credits.
That's right. And, you know, if you need to set up a proof of concept for a customer, don't hunt around for hardware at your business. Spin up virtual machines on Microsoft Azure. If the machines are not turned on, you don't get charged for them. So you can basically spin up a proof of concept up in Azure. You know, if you have to set up something in Windows Server 2012, do it up on Azure. You have the infrastructure there. And then for them, you just remote desktop into that like you would something on premise.
Echo that with SharePoint. I moved all my SharePoint virtual machines to Azure because, you know, I only use them to do migrations and demos and stuff if required. Correct. And, oh, my God, you turn them off and I'm using less than $5 a month for like half a dozen machines. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're sitting around, you're running around with your little Surface Pro device. You don't have to have infrastructure with you.
The other big thing I found too was like, you know, if you're doing a large migration, say, and I need, you know, more grunt, instead of sitting there for 3 hours on my virtual machine clunking away, I can go into Azure and I can pump up it, you know, to 5 processors and 56 gig of RAM for like, you know, 3 minutes rather than 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it's done. And then I just scale it back as I need it and turn it off. And I've only used, you know, a couple of bucks again. So that scalability is just phenomenal.
Yeah, and we've announced higher scalability with A8 and A9 virtual machines. So there's the ability to run very, very large workloads up there if you need to. But if you're testing out something, if you have to, you know, test out something for a customer, like if you don't know something about storage spaces, go and set it up on Azure, or go and set up something that you don't know about Server 2012. Or download, if you want to do it locally, download an evaluation for server. We have 180-day evals, helps people learn the products. Other places they can learn about all this stuff is up on the Microsoft Virtual Academy. which is a place where we're actually have free training that you can go and learn about this stuff. They're very bite-sized type bits of information. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not so good, but most of the time they're really good. And there's a lot of stuff on Azure. There's a lot of stuff on on-premise stuff. So there's plenty of places to learn. It's just carving out the time to make time for it and learn it. I think that's the focus.
And what's the best way if somebody's got any questions relating to this and they want to get in contact with you?
If they want to get in touch with me, they can go to my blog, which is blogs.technet.com/Jeffa36. You can reply directly to email on that. And away we go from there. And after this, I'm going to go have cupcakes because it's my birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday. So,
thank you. So I'm going to go. Apparently, the team has got cupcakes for me. So I'm going to go do that.
Excellent.
Luckily, I went for a ride this morning, so that'll burn that off.
All right. Well, we don't want to keep Jeff from his cupcakes. Well, thank him very much for his time and all the information that he's shared with us today. It's been fantastic. So, again, I'd like to thank everybody also for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. Listen for the next episode. This episode was brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.